although he trained as a civil servant, then he went to conservatory, and when he came out of conservatory, he taught, he was a critic, and he composed.
Right.
When he began to be successful, who was he writing for? Who is he employed by? How did he make his living?
So Tchaikovsky would have been composing for the Russian elite that would have been interested in supporting the institutions of the symphony, the opera, the ballet. Those were the three most important institutions for him. He would have been writing to maintain his position at the conservatory as a teacher. He also had private support, famously from his patroness, the Countess von Meck, who he never really met on her instructions, but she provided him with a monthly income, basically, that was very important to him.
He never met on her instructions?
On her instructions, yeah. She was a very secretive kind of person, so they had a long correspondence, which is wonderful to read, but they, as far as I know, never actually met in person. So it was like his secret aunt or something who kind of came along and provided him money. And he wrote some of his most important letters that we have about his music and what he thought of what he was doing when he was writing music. He was writing to Nadezhda von Meck. And so, you know, ideas we have about, you know, use of programs and extra musical meaning, all of this comes from this really interesting correspondence, which has been translated into English.
And he wrote ballets, operas, symphonies.
Chamber music, concertos, sacred music, you know, solo piano music, pretty much the whole range of songs, solo songs, the whole range of compositional possibilities. I mean, we don't realize necessarily what a great opera composer he was. I mean, how many operas he wrote. I mean, we know Queen of Spades is still done quite often, but, you know, there are a good dozen Tchaikovsky operas that really hold the stage very well. His solo songs are a terrific repertory. The solo piano music is really excellent as well.
So let's talk about his symphonies. Did he have an arc or an evolution in the way he wrote?
He did, yes. So, you know, his first three symphonies are fairly much in keeping with the standard approach to the symphony in the 1870s or so, built on the classical tradition, sometimes with programmatic content. So he, you know, will quote themes, Polish themes from his third symphony, for example, or extra musical content of other sorts. So he has six numbered symphonies plus the Manfred Symphony, which is based on a poem by Byron. So seven symphonies altogether. But the last four symphonies, including the Manfred Symphony, developed the symphony in very interesting kinds of ways. Formally, thinking about new ways to unify all four movements, drawing in explicit extra musical content, the Manfred Symphony, experimenting with the order of the movement, so ending with a slow movement in the case of his last symphony, the Pathetique Symphony in B minor. So he was getting more and more experimental as he wrote his last four symphonies.
Did he take the tradition in which he grew up and add his own style based on influences of other people with whom he had contact or with whom he studied?
Well, the question of influence is interesting, and I'm not sure that there's a satisfactory answer yet. I mean, one of the things that he did, you know, in terms of personal influence, I think his work as a ballet composer influenced how he thought about the symphony. And he was quite frank about this. One of the reviews of the, I think it's Fifth Symphony, in fact, complained about the third movement being more too much like ballet, too dance-like. And he responded, he said, well, you know, yes, it's dance-like, but what's wrong with that? I mean, you know, why shouldn't the ballet and ideas of dance inhabit our minds as we listen to a symphony? And he thought that was an important new dimension to bring into the symphony.
So the Fifth Symphony in particular.
Well, this is a symphony that we know he composed with an extra musical program, ideas that didn't have to do just with the notes themselves. And these ideas did have to do with fate. And he wrote about this in one of his letters to the Countess von Meck. However, unlike the Fourth Symphony, where he did talk about a program, for the Fifth Symphony, he didn't publish the program. So it's one of these cases where we have this biographical information that tells us that he was thinking about a program, but he seems not to have wanted his listeners to think about that program. Nonetheless, you know, most listeners today know the story and I think are influenced by that idea. And it plays out, I think, in the way that the very first music that we hear at the beginning of the first movement which is a kind of motive or a motto. That motto recurs in all four movements, and when it finally comes back in the fourth movement, it's changed from something that seems quite somber to something that seems quite triumphant. And so there's a kind of correspondence. It moves from E minor to E major. There's a correspondence with the idea of a motive that recurs in every movement and that changes from minor to major, with the same kind of idea that happens in Beethoven's fifth, where there's a connection with fate also. And I think that's those two, when you put the Beethoven connection with the thematic connection, it seems to reinforce that idea that some idea of transcendence over fate is what the symphony is about.
Is there any particular part that...
Yeah, I can play that if you want to. Just that basic idea. Which has a kind of simple, almost march-like feel. And then
this is the fourth movement?
The beginning of the fourth movement. From minor to major is very important for how we perceive the last movement as being brighter, happier, more transcendent.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.